Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Finke van Schoonhaven, a designer, writer, and fellow podcaster, and we're going to talk about self-care for the creatives today. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting software for freelancers and small business owners. If you work for yourself, you know that the world was not built for the self-employed. Many institutions are simply not keeping up with the pace of change, like banks, retirement savings, employment insurance, and accounting services. FreshBooks is among the innovators who have stepped up to provide a new accounting solution in this rapidly changing world. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/UIbreakfast and enter UI Breakfast in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Hi, so nice to be on the show. Thanks so much for inviting me.
We're thrilled. Thank you for making the time.
No problem.
We're going to start with a short questionnaire and then go to the main topic.
Great.
Does it sound good? Yeah. All right. Question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Well, I actually am currently transitioning into a new job. So as of the time of this recording, I don't do anything. I'm currently taking a little vacation between jobs. And I'm about to start in about a week's time at Uber as a designer. So I'm a designer and I'm about to join at Uber. And previously, I've been working at Atomic, which is an online design and prototyping tool. And there I've been doing a lot of marketing design, communications, and just a like mixed bag of design and marketing.
Wow, congratulations on your new job.
Thank you. Yes, it's very exciting.
How did you get there? What's your background story?
Oh, my background story. So if you haven't realized by now that I have a strange accent, I originally come from New Zealand, which is a little country all the way down next to Australia. And I moved over to Amsterdam a couple of years ago. But before I moved, I studied in New Zealand. So I first did a degree in marketing, in business and marketing. And then after that, I sort of realized that it wasn't quite as sort of creative and hands-on as I really wanted it to be. So a lot of the degree was like writing reports and doing market research, which is all like really great and I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to go that next step and then sort of take the information that I'd learned or that I'd researched and turn that into something creative. So I then went to Massey University and did a postgraduate diploma in visual communication design, which is such a mouthful to say. But it was really a mixture of graphic design and also a little bit of digital here and there mixed with print and branding. So a bit of an all-round kind of design discipline postgraduate paper. So yeah, I kind of did those two things and then packed my bags and moved over to Europe. And I've been here since then.
Well, you have a really dangerous mix of different kinds of education because marketing skills and research are absolutely amazing for a designer. And you have all of this under your belt.
Yes, I've actually found it a very good combination. It's been quite useful, actually, to have this background in marketing and be able to apply that to design as well. Because for me, I mean, personally, I find design is a lot about selling. And so you need to know how to sell and how to, you know, take the things that have been researched and all of that information and put that into some sort of creative output. So I found that the combination has been pretty useful so far in my career, which is good because I wasn't planning on doing that path when I started.
What does your typical day look like?
Oh, man. My typical day, I usually get up pretty early at about 6 a.m., although I'm slowly trying to make that earlier, but it's a bit difficult. But I generally get up early and spend 2 hours working on my side projects before logging onto my day job. So my side projects involve a podcast, which you mentioned earlier. I currently co-host a podcast called Design Life with a friend of mine, Charlie Prangley. And on there, we talk about design and side projects for motivated creatives, and it's a lot of fun. So some mornings I'll be working on that. Other mornings I might be writing for my newsletter and my mailing list. Each week I send out a newsletter and do a new blog post. And also I have a Medium publication where I interview other inspiring and underdeserved creatives, trying to sort of lift them up a little bit. So I generally work on that for about 2 hours each morning on my side projects, and then I'll log on to my job. As I said, I was working previously at Atomic, and that was a remote position, so I was working from home. So my day sort of involved me talking to my cat a lot. And yeah, then I'd have lunch. And in the evening, I usually like to cook a nice meal. Cooking is sort of my way to unwind and relax. I know a lot of people really don't like cooking, and my partner, for example, finds it really stressful. So for me, I like to just log off and have some non-screen time after being in front of my screen all day. So yeah, we usually have a nice meal and then sort of relax in the evening.
Wonderful. I'm among those who doesn't like cooking, because when you're cooking for a family of four, that becomes kind of a duty. So,
oh yes, it becomes a chore rather than you know, something to enjoy or relax.
Well, I know a lot of women that can kind of combine that, but definitely, yeah, I'm so glad that you're enjoying it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. So, it is really nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
Oh, that's a really tricky one. What I enjoy the most is probably the community building aspect. So in a lot of the work I do, I really try and talk to other creatives and get to know other people within the space. For me, I get a lot of inspiration from other people, and I like to, you know, have diverse friendships. You know, many of my circle friends are different, you know, they don't overlap very much. So I have friends that are designers, I have friends that are developers, I have friends that are accountants. Like, I like to sort of keep a sort of diverse range of people around me. And I like that my work encourages me to connect with other people, even like, you know, doing this podcast and talking to you. And we first met at a meetup a couple of months ago in Amsterdam. And so things like that I really, really enjoy about my field and my work, is that I get to meet all of these amazing creative people that are all doing cool things. Is really inspiring and motivating to me.
Awesome. Actually, you have a lot of things that you are doing. You're calling it as a side project, but you're doing a lot of things, a podcast, a blog, interviews. What goal do you have in mind? Is it, well, obviously inspiration, as you mentioned, but authority building? Do you plan to do info products in future, or are you just, you know, preparing yourself for something great?
I like that, preparing myself for something great. I suppose that is what I'm doing. I just don't yet quite know what that is. I don't know what great is yet. You know, I don't know what that answer is, but it's been really nice to spend the last couple of years, you know, meeting people and speaking at conferences and being able to teach and help other people and sort of uplift them and give them some inspiration and some hope. So that's been really rewarding for me personally. And I think my goal with all of this is just to keep helping other people in some way. You know, I think that all of us have something to give and something to teach and help for other people. And so that's really what I'm trying to do with my podcast and with my blog and my newsletter, is just to try and help others achieve what they want to achieve.
Sounds like a great goal. And the second part of the question was, what do you like the least about your work?
What I like least about my work, I think what I like least about working in the design industry is probably just the unwritten rule of competition. There's a lot of competition I see. You know, all you have to do is look on Dribbble, and people are sort of fighting for producing the best and most amazing looking work. And you know, I also unfortunately see a lot of the time people stealing other people's work and trying to profit off that. And, you know, that really breaks my heart, because I see people that are doing really good work and trying really hard, and, you know, they're amazing at what they're doing, only to have their work sort of ripped off by someone else's, you know, obviously really not cool and not allowed. So that's probably what I like the least that I see in my industry and design, is just people not really respecting one another. And I mean, obviously not everybody is like this, but it's always a shame when you see that someone's work has been ripped off or copied. I think that's really, really a shame and not how our mm-hmm. industry should be, you know.
That's really sad. I totally agree with you here.
Yeah.
I didn't quite clarify, what kind of design work do you do mostly? I mean, hands-on, UX, branding, anything else?
So previously I've done mostly a lot of marketing design. So that's designing websites, that's designing, you know, imagery for social media, help center content. I've also done a little bit of video work, so doing screencasts and tutorials. And now I'm moving to Uber, and I'm actually joining as a product designer there. So it's going to be a lot more UI UX focused. But mm-hmm. for me at the moment, this is a sort of transition phase. So previously marketing design, and now going forward, I'll be more focused on product design.
That's amazing. So what is your next big thing?
My next big thing, well, right now what we're working on with the podcast is developing a community. And so that's probably the next big thing for me that I'm planning to focus on for the rest of the year. So we've been doing the Design Life podcast for almost 2 years now. And mm-hmm. we sort of realized over time, you know, we had these really enthusiastic listeners that would tune in every week and ask questions or provide feedback and advice. And we had all of these, you know, really enthusiastic listeners, but we didn't really have a way for them to talk to one another. And we also would have people emailing us in, asking us questions and advice, and we'd reply, but it was really a one-to-one communication. And we realized that if we sort of had a way to open up this conversation so that others could benefit from it, there's a lot of value there. So what we're doing at the moment now is we've just launched a beta of our community. And so listeners can sign up, and that way they can join. At the moment, it's a Slack group, and they can connect with other members, and we can discuss the show in more detail. They can help contribute to upcoming shows. And we also have other dedicated topics of conversation, like, you know, there's topics dedicated to freelancing or design or resources. So it's really a place where our listeners can come and, you know, start discussions and inspire one another. So that's kind of my next big thing at the moment, is to focus on growing that community and growing the podcast and seeing where it can go in the future. We're really excited about it.
I am so impressed. The community is actually a really big thing, and it takes a ton of effort to maintain yes. and flourish.
Yes, when I started it, I had no idea how much work it would require, but it's actually a lot of fun. But you definitely have to be quite active and involved in the beginning to sort of, you know, get it going and make sure there's conversation happening. And we're sort of getting to the point now, I think, where it's sort of not running on its own, but people are, you know, taking initiative and contributing themselves. So that's really great to see as well.
We had a community project here at UI Breakfast last summer, and I actually set up the forums, and then I just decided to close it because I just realized that without even opening it, because I realized that my heart lies within content creation rather than communicating constantly. And yes. I just can't do everything at once. So it was a hard choice, but I'm so proud that you did it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it goes well. We'll see. We're just doing a beta run right now. But yeah, it would be really nice if it turned into something that we could sort of prosper over time. I think that would be a really nice addition to our show.
Where can people find it? Any URL for it yet?
Yes, if people are interested in listening to it, you can go to designlife.fm. And we're also on Twitter at designlifefm. And you can find all of our shows. I think at the time of this recording, we have 90 episodes. So there's a lot of shows on there. You can probably listen for a week and not get bored, hopefully.
Awesome. Let's go back to our main topic, which is self-care for the creative. And you have a great article that served as a starting point for this topic, which talks about people that need, you know, people need to be more relaxed about showing their work online. Not everything is so perfect, but we're convinced otherwise as we look at Dribbble and Behance and such.
Yeah, I wrote this article, I guess not quite a year ago, earlier this year, I think it was, about the need for creating crappy work. And it sort of stemmed from me just constantly seeing beautiful, amazing artwork on places like Dribbble and Behance and Designer News. And, you know, if you're involved in the online design community, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't really avoid it. You see it everywhere. And, you know, while this amazing work is great and amazing and it should be celebrated and we should be proud of our successes, at the same time, I feel like we're missing an opportunity to learn from one another about our processes and about how we got from A to B and all the sort of messy playfulness that's behind the scenes, that's behind that piece of work. And I sort of realized, like, I felt like we were moving to this world of perfectionism. And in doing so, a lot of the time we don't share our work because we're not proud of it, or we don't think it's good enough, or it's not perfect enough. And so I wrote this post, and ironically, when I was writing it, I thought it was really crappy. I thought, oh my gosh, no one's going to read this. This is just, you know, for me, it was a total brain dump. I think I barely edited it. It was just what was on my mind at the time. And, you know, to my surprise, a lot of people resonated with this article after I published it. I think I've had like almost 15,000 people read it, which for me is quite a lot, just my tiny, tiny little blog. So, yeah, I mean, after I published this, it was quite cool to see and hear other people speaking up. And, you know, majority of people agreed with me. They were like, yeah, this is a problem and this is what is holding me back from, you know, not only publishing my work, but also doing work. You know, I think a lot of people feel paralyzed by this thought of perfectionism. And therefore, unfortunately, that holds us back, which I think is such a shame.
So what is your primary advice for people to stay sane in such abundance of amazing, you know, inspirational examples, which serve the opposite way? They're actually making us feel inferior. What is your advice for dealing with that?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one because so much of what we see online is so perfect. And so my advice would be to try and filter through that perfectionism and find the people who can really uplift you. You know, find and surround yourself with people who believe in you and, you know, that encourage you to play and explore and, you know, not necessarily always be perfect and publish this amazing, perfect work. I'd say find the people who are sharing their process and sharing the messy things and sharing the ugly things and sharing the things that they're not necessarily proud of or that isn't perfect. But there's still a lot of value, I think, to learn from those processes. You know, that's how we learn. If I only ever stared at finished beautiful pieces of design, I don't think I'd really ever learn anything. I wouldn't know how to get there. So I'd say find the people who are vulnerable and who are open to sharing their processes and open to uplifting you and helping you throughout the act of sharing their own work and their own process. And just surround yourself by those people. I think doing that will give you some hope and give you some confidence and encouragement to share your own process.
I can't help but ask, who are these people for you personally? Maybe some design heroes that you're following and looking up to.
Yeah, so some people that I sort of follow and have thus sort of become friends with also. One of them is Sarah Diane, and she is a French hand lettering artist. And I'll make sure to send you maybe the link to these people so you can put it in the show notes. She shares a lot of her process. She actually writes weekly about hand lettering, and she takes you through the whole process of how she creates her work. Also, Eric Friedenson, who is a New York-based designer, F. Studio, I think, is his Instagram, and he shares a lot as well about the process and behind the scenes. And Scotty Russell as well is also another amazing lettering. These are all lettering artists, ironically. I think for lettering especially, there's a lot of process that goes into that, and so it's always interesting to see the behind the scenes of someone, of how someone got to a, you know, a beautiful finished piece of work. But I'll send you the links to these people, and maybe you can pop them in the show notes for those listening.
Maybe part of the reason for that is that hand lettering is where you can truly show off a beautiful process, while a real life UX design, for example, is truly boring.
Right.
You're mostly dealing like with very boring classic UIs, yes, and stuff like that.
Yes, I guess I see what you're saying. Like with things like UI UX, your process is mostly probably boxes and squares, and with hand lettering, your process is beautiful sketches in a sketchbook, right? So it's probably a little bit more appealing and easier to share. But nevertheless, I still think, you know, if you're a UI or UX designer, I still think that there's value to be shared in the process, even if it's just, you know, boxes and squares. And I know that it's not just boxes and squares, right? Because I'm a designer. So there's still a lot of value to be shared and to be learned in that process as well. So I wouldn't let that hold you back from sharing that.
Have a few more questions for you. How to handle specific situations that seem challenging to an independent creative person? And one of those challenges is when you get too many projects at once and you're just overwhelmed juggling all of them. How do you take care of yourself then?
Oh my gosh, overwhelmment. We actually recently did an episode on my own podcast about dealing with overwhelm, because I feel like it's something that we all experience and we don't often really talk about. You hear a lot of talk about burnout. At least I have this year in particular. There's been a lot of discussion around burning out and, you know, being overworked and being stressed. But we don't really talk about being overwhelmed. And I think that it's different. And I think people don't talk about it as much because they feel like, oh, well, I'm not burnt out, so my problems can't be that bad, you know, but I think it's still just as important to talk about. So if you're feeling overwhelmed with how much work you have on and how many projects you've got going on, I mean, I know this. I've been in that situation where you just feel really hopeless, right? Is that how you feel sometimes when you're feeling overwhelmed with projects? Do you just feel hopeless and like you don't even know where to start or begin?
Absolutely. And moreover, I just procrastinate because I'm kind of blocked with these overwhelming feeling, and I just choose to do nothing, which is maybe a protective mechanism of our body or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You sort of hit a wall, right? And you're like, you get paralyzed almost because you're so overwhelmed that you don't know where to begin or what to do. And so instead, you just do nothing. And like you said, maybe you procrastinate. Maybe you procrastinate work, which is, you know, you just work on something else that's not as important, but it's still procrastination. Or maybe you just literally don't do anything, and then you sort of don't really get anywhere. And that, whichever one of those three things you decide to do is not going to get you anywhere, right? It's just going to make the problem worse. So I think if you're dealing with overwhelm, the best thing to do is just confront it, like accept it. I think you just need to say to yourself, okay, I've got too much going on right now, or I'm feeling really stressed about all the projects I have right now, or I've got too many deadlines coming up. And then from there, sort of sit down, like spend half an hour sitting down and just making a plan for yourself about how you're going to get through it.
Any special techniques for this plan, like pushing off the deadlines whenever possible, or something along these lines?
Yeah. So for me, what I use, which has been really helpful, is a bullet journal. And if you're listening and you're not familiar with what the bullet journal system is, we'll put a link into the show notes of what that is, and you can take a look. But essentially, it's just a journaling system where you can write down your daily tasks. And the great thing about it is you can migrate tasks as well. So if you don't complete something today, you can migrate it to tomorrow. And so it's a really good way of keeping accountability and scheduling your week. And so that's what I like to use to... maybe it's not so helpful in the moment of when you're dealing with overwhelm, but for me, it's really good in helping me avoid overwhelm, because that way I can kind of use my bullet journal to see ahead and plan ahead. And so I can look ahead, and if I see in the, like next week, that it's going to be a little bit too much work going on, then that's a red flag for me, and I can already try and reshuffle and reschedule some things to make sure that I avoid that overwhelm once it happens. But I suppose my advice for if you're currently experiencing overwhelm in the moment, make a plan by pulling out what is the biggest priorities. So what are the most important things? And you might prioritize based on the deadline or how important it is to you, etc. And I would rank them in order of priority and then take the top thing first and write out every single little task you have to do to get that done. So not just like, oh, I have to do this presentation. I have to create the presentation. I have to review the presentation. I have to practice the presentation. I have to deliver the presentation. You know, just list out every single micro task. And by doing that, you'll get a really good overview of all the things you have to do and just start making your way through that list. Like, just do the first one, cross it off, do the next one, really break it down. For me, that really helps.
I've been also finding helpful to, let's say you have a lot of work piled up for the next few weeks, and that makes you feel crazy. But it helps to just, you know, clear up the first, you know, 3-4 days and make a clear, edible amount of work for this period. And then when it's over, you can plan ahead for the next few days again and make it possible. So, like, one step at a time, so to speak, because everything is flexible. You can actually move stuff around most times.
Yeah, that's true. Things are flexible, like more flexible than we think, I think. And if you really are dealing with too many deadlines at once, you know, unfortunately, maybe you could have avoided getting yourself into that position. But like I said, just prioritize what you need to do first and just try and push through. I know it's really hard, but once you sort of get through it, you can then learn from this experience that you've had and learn for next time to try and plan your time a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been reading your articles and saying no comes up more than once. So maybe you just can absolutely cancel some of them. Just admit to yourself that you're not going to make it happen and tell other people, and now it's their problem.
Yeah, you can either do that or you can say no to other things in your life. Like, maybe you had said yes to going to a birthday party, and now suddenly you have, you know, have to deal with this consequence and take responsibility that you have deadlines or too many projects on. And so you have to take that responsibility and say no to your friend's birthday, you know? So, like, just make sure, I think, that you have your priorities right. And unfortunately, sometimes you will have to say no to other things in your life that are important. But like I said, hopefully this will only happen to you once and you'll learn from this mistake so that next time you won't be in that position anymore.
Absolutely. Let's take another situation. Let's imagine you are an independent professional, consultant or freelancer, whatever you call yourself, and you have some downtime. You don't have any projects for the next, you know, couple weeks. What do you do to not feel frustrated about it?
This one comes up a lot, actually, where people feel a little bit lost when they don't have any work or any projects on, especially with freelancers. I have quite a few friends that are freelancers, and especially during this time of year right now in the summer period, they experience, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months at a time where they don't have much work. And it can be really difficult, I think, to deal with that if you're not used to it, or if you're someone that doesn't really know what to do with yourself. And like, for me personally, I get bored very easily, and so I always need to have something to do to keep my mind active, and I'm not very good at things like relaxing or, I wouldn't say I'm not good at not working, but I just always like to have something to sort of tinker with and keep my fingers busy, so to speak. So I guess if you're experiencing this down period, in order to stop yourself from going crazy, there's a couple things you could do. The first is to just enjoy it while it lasts. And I know that that's easier said than done, because you're probably freaking out right now about when the next piece of work is going to come in and why you're not getting projects. So that one can be a little bit easier said than done and a little bit difficult to actually enjoy it. The second thing you could do is to start a side project. You know, you could do something that maybe you've been thinking about doing for a little while, but you've never quite had the time to do it. Now is a great time. You could just explore that idea. You don't necessarily have to turn it into something. You know, I think a lot of the time we think side projects have to have their own website and their own Instagram account in order to be considered legit. But I think, you know, your side project could just be something like drawing in your book, you know, one illustration a day or something like that. Doing that could be a nice way to keep active and also a nice way to sort of keep your design and creativity muscles active throughout that period. I forgot what the third thing is that I was going to say.
That's already quite a lot of advice.
Yeah, I feel like I had a third one, but it's not coming to me anymore.
You know, sometimes when there is too much work, I'm just dreaming of, you know, taking a half day off and just walking in the street or maybe doing some shopping as a free human, you know. And then when it comes to you, you're not capable to enjoy it anymore. That's really sad. We kind of need to find that balance between, just take it as it goes.
Exactly. And that reminds me of what my third one was actually, which is to seek inspiration. And that could be walking on the street, right? It could be going for a walk or a bike ride or a drive in your car, depending on where you live. It could be going to a museum. You know, it could be a range of things. So I think I would try and use this downtime as an opportunity to either relax, like go shopping if you really wanted to be doing that. Maybe you could go away for a weekend or something, or start a side project, or just, you know, seek inspiration. And it doesn't have to be super purposeful. You know, you don't have to go to a design museum or something. Your inspiration could be as simple as going for a bike ride and just feeling the breeze on your face. So those are sort of the three things that I would recommend that you do. But like you said, it is difficult that once you suddenly have this downtime, it's like, what do I do with this? Because it's so not normal, right? And so it can be difficult to accept that you've got this time and do something with it.
And you know, there is a rule. I don't have any idea how it works, but I call it a rule of energy concentration or something like that. So whenever you start, I would say hustling or actively working on your own stuff and interacting with the real world, maybe, you know, launch pre-orders for a new book or do something like that. Mm-hmm. And you'll see how new orders, like new contracts will start rolling in, even if you don't want them anymore.
Right.
Like, not specifically don't want them, but the more you work, the more work comes to you, and it doesn't have to be client work. So you can kind of trigger that energy. I have no idea why, but it's been true for me so many times.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like, you know, there's been a few times where I've spoken at conferences and that's led to something else because someone saw me speak there and then now they want me to write on their blog or something. And, you know, you make connections through that as well and people refer you. And it's kind of like a snowball, right? Like once you start creating something, one person notices and then that kind of flows on. So yeah, it's kind of like this circle that sort of keeps running. The more you work, the more work that seems to come to you.
Right. And, you know, speaking at conferences, it's more of a logical consequence because you get exposed to people, but you might be just working on something internally and still trigger the energy. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
What can you say about, generally speaking, keeping the right work-life balance? Considering that work comes and goes in paths and waves and such.
Yeah, that's always a really hard one. And I'm going to be really honest and say that I haven't figured it out. For me, I feel like I'm in this period where I'm still, you know, relatively early in my career. I only graduated from university 2 years ago. So for me, I'm very much in this mindset in this period of my life where it's work, work, work. But, you know, for others, you know, people who have families and maybe, you know, a little bit older than me or have been working a little bit longer, you know, you enter different phases in your life. And I obviously can't speak as someone who has a family. You know, I don't have any children. I'm still quite young and early in my career. So I can only really speak from my experience and what I do, which is I work too much, to be honest. And I'm always working and for me, I love working, and so this concept of work-life balance is always hard for me because, to me, they sort of blend into one another. Like, for me, work is life and life is work, and I know that can sound really terrible, but I just genuinely enjoy and love what I do. And so, for me, when I'm working, it doesn't really feel like work because I love it so much and it's so enjoyable, and I try as much as possible to integrate play within my work. And I think that's why, for me, it doesn't always feel like work. Like, sometimes work for me is play as well. So, I mean, I definitely still have these moments, I think, where I know that I need to take a break and to rest and recharge. And, you know, that's what I'm doing right now between my jobs. I'm taking a week off to just kind of relax. And I think that's the important thing, is to recognize when we need that space and that time for ourselves, and actually honor that and give ourselves that opportunity to recharge. I haven't yet figured out how to integrate it like into my daily life. But when I sort of have these moments where I feel overworked, that's when I'll take a break and really, you know, not be on my computer for a day or two and enjoy the streets of Amsterdam and kind of walk around and catch up with friends and things like that.
Yeah, and Amsterdam is a beautiful city to do that.
It is a really nice city. Whether you want to walk or bike, it's beautiful to walk around in.
Also, speaking of balance, I think it does have to do something with age. I might be wrong, definitely wrong here, but me and my husband are around 30 right now. We're still young, mm-hmm. but we do remember the times when we were, you know, 23, 25. We were working like crazy, like nuts yeah. crazy. And yeah. It felt natural. It felt amazing, like we're winning the world. And now he has his own big company, and the most productive people are people in that age, because that's when you kind of make your career. So it might be totally fine to, for a certain period of life, to kind of shift priorities towards work and feel okay about it.
Yeah, I think for me, something that I always consciously have in mind is, like, I never want to just be a robot. Like, I never mm-hmm. just want to be someone that only talks about work and my whole life is work. And, you know, to me, that's really boring. You know, I see people on Instagram, for example, that only ever share their work. And, you know, you don't even know who they are or what they look like, because even their avatar is like a picture of their work. And to me, I'm not interested in being one of those people. I personally find people far more interesting when they share a combination of both their work and their life. To me, that, you know, you become a more interesting person to me when I see, you know, one shot might be your work, and then one shot might be, oh, I did this amazing hike over the weekend. And so for me, that's more what I try and keep in mind consciously, is to not just only ever talk and share my work, but to also just be a human, you know, like be an interesting person online, and, you know, sometimes share something personal, something that I did over the weekend. Because I think that that's what helps to connect and create these relationships with people.
Absolutely. Another topic I'd like to cover today, I think probably the last one for this episode, is the topic of, you know, body kind of self-care, that we need to mm-hmm. take care of ourselves, considering that we are physical human beings too.
Yes.
We had an episode with Thomas Lorinavičius here a few weeks ago, and he was recommending, whenever you're, you know, confused what to do next, start with your body and just basic stuff like eating good, sleeping well, and you're going to instantly feel more productive.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. So for me, I've spent the last 2 years working from home. So I've really had to be conscious of what I do with my body and how I get exercise. You know, I will admit there's been days where I only do 100 steps a day, and all I do is walk from my bed to the bathroom to my office. And, you know, obviously it doesn't take a genius to know that that's obviously not healthy. So I've had to really be conscious about my exercise and my health, and try and, you know, make that part of my routine and form a habit out of it. So, I mean, for me, my main sort of form of exercise is yoga, and that's what I do, you know, a few times a week. Also, living in Amsterdam, we cycle everywhere. I never take right. public transport, and so I do cycle a lot, even though my step count might be low that day. I probably cycled at least 5 to 10 kilometers. So, you know, I'm always out and about cycling and going places. So that kind of helps as well. And with food, I suppose, like I said at the start of this episode, I really enjoy cooking. And for me, that's a way to relax and unwind. So, you know, I really put a lot of love into the meals that we have. And I probably spend on average about an hour and a half doing dinner, maybe two sometimes. So, you know, I try as much as possible to avoid the convenience foods and things like that and really make a nice, healthy meal. To me, that's a really nice way to end the day.
That's great. That serves both things. You're relaxing, and at the same time, it results in a healthy meal that you're consuming.
Yeah, true. That's true. Awesome. Unfortunately, it is time consuming, obviously, and we all feel, you know, we're all very busy people, and so we all have to make choices about what we're going to make time for. And health in your body is obviously something that should be prioritized, and you should make a choice to prioritize it. And if you're struggling to make that time for it, then just choose one thing. You know, I would say maybe start with one small thing, like have a healthy meal or go for a walk around the block. You know, you don't have to suddenly go from night to day and suddenly you've got a strict training schedule and strict eating diet and whatever. Just start really small, you know, and that could be as simple as going for a walk or adding an extra vegetable to your plate. I don't know, something like that.
There is an illustrator blogger that I'm following, but she's also doing like some lifestyle advice, and she says that it's incredibly important for her to just get out of the house every day for whatever grab some bread, you know, fresh baked bread,
right,
or something.
Right.
I don't know. Do, run an errand, just do something. And I'm guilty as charged. Like, probably 1 or 2 days a week, I do that, what you're saying, 100 steps inside a house,
you know,
or something.
Yeah, I feel so bad about it, but it's true. Some days I just don't want to go outside.
Yeah. Do you have any specific cure? Because I don't have a specific cure. It just feels amazing to enjoy this privilege, but it can be so dangerous at times.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, there's a market that's like one block away. And so if I'm in that moment where I'm like, oh, Fem, you should really go outside today, or I need to like do something, make my body walk or something, then that's sort of my go-to thing. I'll walk to the market, have a look around, usually pick up a, you know, nice piece of fruit or orange juice or something, and walk back home. And that probably takes me about half an hour. So it's a nice way to just sort of force myself. I think if you have like not a routine, but a route maybe in mind, or a destination, you know, something that you want to do, maybe you need to pick something up or buy something or whatever, I think that can help motivate and encourage you to get out of the house.
Absolutely. I find myself that I really get into the focus while driving. So for the last half year, I've been like getting in my car, driving 10 minutes to the next mall, sitting down in a cafe, opening up my laptop. And now all of a sudden, I'm focused, I'm dressed up, I have a nice salad in front of me, and it helps.
Nice. Yeah, no, it really does help. I do that too with my local cafe around the corner. I will put some proper clothes on and take my laptop down, and that really does help you get in the zone. Sometimes just that change of environment, especially if you're dealing with procrastination or you're feeling really distracted and you need to sort of get back on task, a change of environment can be amazing. And that could be as simple as going to the, you know, cafe just around the corner.
As we're wrapping up today's episode, probably two tips for people who want to get into the zone of working, of being creative. You know, what are your top two pieces of advice?
Oh, my first advice would be to, and sort of what I touched on earlier in this episode, is to just surround yourself with inspiring people and people that uplift you. I think you'll learn a lot from those people, and you know, relationships are really important and can go a long way. You know, one day that person might be your mentor, or they might offer you a job. You know, you just don't know. And so that would probably be my number one piece of advice, is just surround yourself with those people and be active and involved in the design community, whether that's your local one or online. And my second piece of advice would be to make time for the things you love and prioritize them. And so if that's drawing in your sketchbook, then make time for that every day, even if it's just 5 minutes, and prioritize it. You know, make sure that you do that before you watch an episode of The Office or something like that. That would probably be my two pieces of advice.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Fimke, for joining us today. It's super valuable, and it's nice to go back from, you know, professional topics to actual self-care, because we can do our best work without being feeling good.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find your work online? Where can people find your work online?
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Fimke SVS. That's probably the best place to find me. And you can also find my website, which is Fimke.design. And my name, Fimke, I know it's a tricky one. It's Fimke.design. And that's my website. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there. You can also read my articles, like the one about crappy work that we've been talking about on this episode.
Sounds great. Thank you so much once again, and have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. They're offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/UIBreakfast and enter UIBreakfast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.